Hello and welcome to the episode zero, I guess, of the Ledger Status or Ledger Cast podcast. We haven't really settled on a name, I guess, Josh, but I think Ledger Cast is the operating name for now. So I'm here with Josh Ulsewicz. Hello, Josh.
What up, Brian and everyone else?
Yeah, and my name is Brian Krogsgaard. You may know each of us by other handles, I guess. So Josh, you're Carpe Noctum on Twitter. And I am Ledger Status on Twitter, and y'all may be following us there, or you may be finding us in the iTunes store or wherever you catch your podcasts. So we are happy to have you, and Josh, I appreciate you doing this project with me.
Definitely. Speaking of podcasts, where's like a good, like the best app for podcasts? Stitcher?
Are you an Android absolutist?
Oh yeah, for sure. Android, PC, yeah.
No, not Stitcher. The way they monetize is like breaking up podcasts and sticking their mid-roll ads and stuff through them.
Okay.
I'd have to look up the one that I used to use because it's got an Android app, but I swear by Overcast for iOS because it's got a feature called Smart Speed, which is really great.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, because I can't watch YouTube unless it's on 1X or 1.5X or 2X.
Right, and this is a good thing to go ahead and get out of the way at the beginning because as people can hear, I'm Southern and talk slow. So listening to me at 1X is painful. But yeah, 1.5, what this does is actually, it's 1.5X, but then it like cuts breaks and stuff like that. So it actually goes faster.
Oh, okay.
And anyway, so that's called Overcast. And then I can't remember the ones, but I'll link a couple of them.
Because I gotta get into the podcasting game, man.
Yeah, podcasts are where it's at, man. I listen to them pretty much if I'm not staring at a computer. If I'm doing anything, I'm listening to a podcast. So I'm happy to be able to talk with you about technical and fundamental analysis. We can talk about price action or whatever, crypto related. So we're going to try to cover the whole ecosystem, but we'll be approaching this podcast mostly, I guess, from like a trader's perspective and maybe like crypto enthusiast perspective. So you have been involved in crypto for a really long time. So do you want to give a little bit of your origin story of where you come from?
Sure. Yeah. So 2013, it's crazy to think that that's a long time.
In this space, it's a long time. You're like a grandpa of crypto.
It's kind of true. Somebody said like crypto's dog years. So, you know, 1 year in crypto, 7 years. In real time,
I would say at a minimum.
Yeah,
maybe like fruit fly.
I mean, it's things that have happened. Even like last week, all the news we got.
I know it's absurd.
That's like 4 years worth of news, even in crypto. It was crazy. Yeah. But so yeah, I started in 2013. I had this mutual fund that wasn't going anywhere. I had all this student loan debt. I'm like, what am I gonna do with my life? And I don't even know how I found Bitcoin, honestly. I think I read about it on Slashdot and dismissed it. That was even before 2013. Mm-hmm. Slashdot is like this super techie, nerdy site. I don't know how to describe it. Do you know Slashdot?
Yeah. It's kind of like a Reddit, but just for tech.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, like a curated Reddit, sort of. Mm-hmm. And there used to be this podcast on there that I was listening to. These guys from New York. I don't know. Anyway. I heard about it then, did nothing. And then I had this mutual fund. I was cashing it out. I was like, okay, what am I going to do? And I ran across it again. A buddy of mine is talking to me about LTC back in 2013. Imagine that. And I was like, no, Bitcoin's the one. He's like, no, LTC, it's silver, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, whatever. So yeah, that's how I got into Bitcoin. And then, you know, it's like a disease.
Was Litecoin your first crypto purchase?
No, it was like Bitcoin was my first crypto purchase.
Okay.
I was in Litecoin early though, and I didn't hold it. I mean, who's going to hold it for 4 years and expect this?
While it does nothing.
Right, exactly. So yeah, that's pretty much it. And then I found more crypto communities through Reddit, trading our Bitcoin markets on the subreddit. Whale Club, Whale Pool, Stake Pool. I went through, you know, been through all that garbage. Mm-hmm. And then it sort of evolved into Telegram, which honestly I prefer because at least valuable things, because then you can look back and read and like what people said, you know, because if you're not there for the audio and in TeamSpeak, you kind of lose You know, we have Discord now, which I think is even better than both Telegram and TeamSpeak put together.
Yeah, I don't even know what TeamSpeak is, but what? I've been enjoying Telegram.
You're in audio and you don't know what TeamSpeak is, right?
No idea. I like Telegram. It's, I don't like the single channel component. Mm-hmm. So like if you're in some group with people, you can't like side chain it, if you will, and have conversations. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you come back and there's 5,000 messages, even in a relatively small group. So I really like Discord because you can topic it off. For my main business, I use Slack for like 900 or 1,000 members that I have for that. And I like that because then you can topic it off as well, except for Slack on the free plans only keeps, I don't know, 10,000 messages. So everything just disappears on you every now and then, which is really frustrating. So
yeah,
I like Discord because you can have more control.
I had to boycott Slack. Too many people were trying to get me on their Slack. And I'm like, nope, no Slack for me. I'm good. It's just too much of a resource hog. All the like login stuff that I don't know. It's just too much to keep track of for me. So yeah, I used Discord for the first time the other day and I was like, wow, this is really great actually.
Yeah, I think I have, 20 plus Slack logins that are unique. They don't have global logins,
which is frustrating. Exactly. Like what is going on there? Yeah.
So for listeners, I guess we would recommend Twitter, Telegram, maybe Reddit, for kind of keeping up with the immediate news, if you will, since it moves so fast.
Oh, Twitter, man. Let's talk about Twitter. First of all, Brian, tell us about your origin story, Brian.
Sure. I've been investing in stocks since I was like 15. I remember when Google IPO'd and I was like, I don't know. It's like, I think my dad gave me a little bit of money and he was like, go learn the stock market. You keep whatever you make. So that got me really interested in investing from an early age. And I saved and I would put my money in the stock market. And I remember Google IPO and like some other big companies back then. And I was like, this is ridiculous. This tech company doesn't make anything. So I've always been interested in learning. And I had this little system of like five or six technical indicators, including Bollinger Bands, by the way. Nice. So like seeing John Bollinger in crypto is amazing.
Right.
and like using that as part of my little teenage trading strategy. And I did that through college and actually helped pay for a lot of my college through some of that. Nice. So that was pretty cool.
Nice.
And then like most people that go through college, eventually you go broke anyway and spend all that money. So but I was still interested. And then the financial meltdown was around when I graduated school. So it was actually amazing for me because as soon as I started putting savings back from a job, like back into the market, the I don't know what the Dow was, like 7,500 or 8,000, you know, so it was a great time to get back into that kind of stuff. So, but I've been a lot more hands off as an adult, I guess. And I heard about Bitcoin a lot because I come from the tech space, but I just always, like you said, I just dismissed it. And I even remember when the bear market started, I think I was listening to an NPR podcast and mowing my yard and they were like talking about Bitcoin crashing and I was
so
like,
specific.
Of course it crashed. Yeah, I know. Like I just have this memory of like mowing my yard. And I was like, of course it crashed. It was a total bubble. Then I like didn't follow up on that, which would have been pretty smart. But
then you completed your lawn and came back
finished
5
mowing
years
my yard.
Later and here we are.
Yeah. And then, the next time I thought about it, this is classic, like, how random users get in was when TV shows talk about it. Mm. What was the one? The Good Wife.
Yeah, I was going to say it was probably The Good Wife.
Yeah, I watched that. And like that would have given me such a better entry on Bitcoin because I watched it, I don't know, a couple years ago with my wife when it was on Netflix or something. Totally disregarded again. Like didn't even, like I invested in stuff, but I was such an idiot about it. Like treating it like it was Beanie Baby stuff. But once it clicked, it clicked. And for me, for whatever reason, that wasn't until this year. So I got a late entry, if you will, compared to some people. But when I get into something and I realize like it makes sense, I tend to dig in pretty hard. So I've been learning like crazy and, you know, some background in understanding investments helped.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the stock market, like fundamental analysis matters.
Right.
And in crypto, I learned the hard lessons of market cycles in my first season of like starting to be comfortable with alts and stuff. Mm-hmm. So like I made some successful trades in during like the alt season, if you will, in the spring, between like Ethereum and Litecoin's run up. And I was like pretty weary about Bitcoin during all the fork drama because there's so much FUD out there. I wasn't following you yet, obviously. and what my problem was that once that was essentially determined, I was like still, I was starting to get heavy in aughts and still a little weary of Bitcoin's drama until I slowly became a Bitcoin maximalist holding a lot of altcoins, which is not the best position to be in necessarily. Yeah. So like right now feels pretty good to me where finally, at least a little bit, the correlation is a little better than it was there in whatever, September, October, which was pretty rough. So it's been fun.
It's amazing that Bitcoin will consolidate for like 2 days and all these alts will pop up. And then as soon as Bitcoin breaks out, they all get bashed back down.
Yeah, my favorite indicator is the Siacoin Heiken Ashi chart. Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So on the weekly, you can like see the end of essentially alt season on that Siacoin chart. And then... and then you can see the fake out, which owned me because Bitcoin dipped whatever $3,000 in September. Mm-hmm. And I essentially doubled down on my fiat investment during that dip. So my entry was fantastic considering being like later in the year. And then of course I was like, looks like another alt cycle is starting here. Like totally not understanding true market cycles. And once I got owned and took my lumps a little bit, I dug back into the history. So now I'm like a true believer in market cycles and have looked back on alts and Bitcoin and like just over the years and how crazy they've gone almost every year. And like you show that chart with Bitcoin with like every December's terrible, the quarterly chart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So some of that kind of stuff's been really helpful and understanding market cycles and all that. So it's been interesting. It's a fascinating journey that I've been on, but I'm assuming I'm not alone in learning some of these lessons. And anyway, so that's kind of where I got into it and where I'm at. Fortunately, like relative to my initial investment, like I've done fine even in Bitcoin terms. So like I haven't gotten, I'm not like only looking at my balance in USD, that type of thing.
Right.
But that took a fairly active amount of trading to try to kind of scrap my way back up to pay for some bags that feel pretty heavy.
Yeah. I think that's a lot of people. I think a lot of people are super impatient and they want immediate returns. You know, they want instant gratification.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, you know, the entries that I've made the most money on, I've done the least amount of anything. You know, I just... bought and hold. That's all it takes, really.
Yeah. So you didn't buy the perfect entry necessarily, but then you just waited it out.
I mean, my entries are pretty good just based on cloud, but even then, like, they don't have to be perfect, you know? You don't have to buy the bottom and sell the top to make money. That's what I think a lot of people lose the sight of that, and they get super obsessed with, like, buying the bottom of this alt at whatever and selling the very top of the wick, you know? It's like, relax, you know, like, what do you just wait for confirmation and sell on the way up, like as it's going, you know, a lot of people have, I don't have the altcoin mentality like Ambroid or Noose or whoever, but I'm more like the Brian Beamish mentality where it's, you know, put your orders in, let the orders get hit, get out. Yeah, 'cause that's the other problem. If you're in these alts at a high, like a high position value, it's really hard to get out just because the liquidity is so bad for the most part. That's not everything, but you know, any of these like Siacoin, for instance, you know, the liquidity will fluctuate on all of these, but when the liquidity isn't there, you're going to hit a lot of slippage and your order is going to fall down, you know, anyway. So what's, you know, just sell on the way up. That's what I don't get it.
Yeah, there's I don't know how many coins on some of these like popular alt trading platforms, Bittrex and Binance. Mm-hmm. But the order books on them, like the whole order book for some of them could be like 10 BTC, something like that, like on the, on say the buy side. So if you're selling into that, like if you consider your little sliver of where you're trying to sell, there could be not a lot on the other end. So yeah, I agree with you. I, that was another thing where like, I've used stop losses my whole life. Mm-hmm. So like some of the bags that I ended up holding was purely because of underestimating Bitcoin's power to demolish an alt while I sleep. Yeah. And then it's like, oh crap, that just like went 20% below where my stop loss would be other than the fact that I was asleep. So yeah, the lack of sophistication in trading platforms in this space actually pretty incredible.
That could be a whole podcast right there.
Yeah, one day we'll have to talk about it, but I swear I will live for the day when I can get one cancels the other orders somewhere. Because I do the same thing. Like ever since my first trade really in the space, I've set my sell orders for where I want to get rid of it, you know, some mm-hmm. targets mm-hmm. and just let those roll. And if you wake up one day and it sold, maybe you didn't catch it all the way, but you did pretty good based on like a Kumo target or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you keep rolling. But if it goes the other way and your order was for the other direction, like it could be pretty painful, you know? So,
yeah, that's why you have to be pretty sure, you know?
Yep.
And with alts, that's hard to do when you're guessing bottoms, you know? It's like, what did Buffett say when you're picking bottoms, you get messy or something? Like, some diaper analogy. It's funny.
I don't know, but you know, there are some successful traders that like literally their entire trading style is draw this massive descending triangle. And then, like when it just consolidates all the way to the tip, they're in. And then it just pops. You know, sometimes that's what people do and they are successful with it, but that freaks me out a little bit. Yeah. I don't like to really try to call the exact bottom or like you said, the exact top. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's fascinating. The space moves so fast. Like something could barely have shifted the trend and it moved 80%. So like compared to the traditional market, you just got to be careful with all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And that gets to like the emotional trader, the retail trader. You know, I'm a retail trader. I know how it is, but Chris Dunn talks about this a lot, but you see it on the chart, like you said, you know, it goes up 80% in a day, like IOTA right now, for instance, you know.
Oh my God. It's the, I tweeted this last night. It's like the dumbest thing I've seen in this space so far, at least for something at that market cap. I don't, well, maybe Bcash.
You just have all these retail traders with all this money all of a sudden. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with making money on anything. I don't care.
Sure. I'm happy for anyone that's climbed this
right
IOTA run, but I hope they're being careful.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Bitcoin Cash or Bcash, the wick there, you're going to see wicks, you're going to see retracements, we're going to see it on Bitcoin, you know, we're going to see a 50% day. It's bound to happen eventually.
I don't even know what IOTA's at now, but on the daily, the Kumo top, so you are like the cloud master, the Ichimoku system.
I became the cloud master. That's another video or another podcast right there. But
yeah, we'll take topics on all these things. Yeah. So we're just trying to kind of intro some stuff today.
Yeah.
But that IOTA is a hilarious one because like I would have bet that like the Kumo top on the daily, which was around 150,000 sats, would have been like max target just because pure market cap with IOTA is absurd at that level. And when I tweeted about wanting to short this thing last night, it was almost 400,000 sats. It's like in 3 days, it's like these three or four daily candles after it's already gone on a 300% run and it goes on another over 200% run. I don't even know what that is. So it's like 600, 800% since November, but like the last few days are just absurd. And I understand that like apparently IOTA, like long-term investors can't get deposits into exchanges, like the IOTA wallets just aren't working. So there's some sort of crazy stuff going on. So people just need to be careful with that kind of stuff and, you know, enjoy your profits and don't expect that to last forever because that in that example, if that does not completely explode, I'll be astonished.
I completely agree. And it was the fact that it was only on Bitfinex worried me even more, especially hearing about their ownership, them being Bitfinex. how much they might have. You know, it's just like, didn't feel right to me. Like, it's great if you made money. You know, if you made millions on IOTA, I'm so happy for you. But it just wasn't for me.
Yeah, in every situation like that, it's always zero sum. You know, so somebody's going to get toasted on it. Somebody's going to buy.
Somebody's holding that bag for sure.
Yeah, and that one's going to be very, very heavy for somebody. But yeah, I didn't even have a Bitfinex account, and I started mine because I was interested in trading IOTA. And, you know, my one trade didn't work out. I actually got out of it fairly quickly because the signal didn't hit like I wanted. This was a while back. And then was like, maybe I'll do this again later, except for IOTA wasn't available anywhere and they kicked Americans off. So I kind of wrote it off after that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's so many crazy stories with alts like that. And I guess it's worth episode zero advice just to tell people to be very careful with mega pumps like that.
For sure.
But at the same time, I mean, you can ride them.
Yeah, you got to let the runners run, but you can't hope to sell the top, you know, because it's going to be 2 seconds and then it's going to dump pretty hard.
Yeah. Actually, if anything, because of some of those bags I'm holding now, because of my September fake out purchases, some of those were paid for by a couple of those runs. You know, Ethereum did that, of course. That mm-hmm. was like that was the one that probably brought millions of new people into this ecosystem.
Oh, for sure.
Litecoin did it going into Bitcoin drama. And then the two that I paid attention to were like, and these are like full of, I guess we could call like noob money, but like OMG and Neo are just ridiculous.
Same thing.
They went on awesome runs, but you know, they paid for it and they're still paying for it.
IOTA reminds me exactly of that, you know, OMG and Neo, where it's like I dismissed it less than a penny and then it goes to like $10 or something. I'm like, well, I don't know if I should feel bad or stupid, you know.
Sure. I think the difference is that some people don't look at market cap at all, and it's got flaws, but IOTA was already, I don't know, $1 billion crypto and without much of a product yet.
Yeah, I kept seeing it on the market cap pages, and I'm like, what is this thing, IOTA? Like, and yeah. Then I saw there's that article in September about some flaw, and I'm like, all right, that's not for me.
Yeah, that was when I wrote it off for good.
Yeah, yeah.
But Neo and OMG, at least they were new, and they were like out of the top one. Or AntShares wasn't new, but AntShares became Neo. Mm-hmm. Whole nother world. Oh, let's pump this thing 1,000% because they changed their name.
Yeah.
But those at least were like making their way up to the top, whatever, 10, 20 in market cap. So those runs propelled them to that. But like starting at number 9, and now it's as of yesterday, it's the third or fourth biggest crypto. It's ridiculous.
IOTA is? Or OMG? Yeah.
I think IOTA hit number 4.
Oh, man. Let's take a look.
Yeah.
I have it at number 7 for by market cap or?
Yeah. It peaked at number 4. It's probably the explosion may have already started. By the time we talk about this, maybe it'll be back to number 9. Or by the time the podcast issues.
Well, doesn't it have like a 4 trillion coin thing or something? Like,
yeah, it's something absurd. So like you can't measure very much, but
yeah.
With the lack of liquidity because people can't deposit,
mm-hmm.
maybe what's causing, well, it's still up.
Well, it's like Bcash when Bittrex first, you know, as soon as it went live, it pumped really hard on Bittrex. There was basically nobody could get it into the exchange to sell it. So, you know, it's a supply
apparently,
issue.
And apparently that's what happened here. Okay, so I'm looking at the dollar chart, uh-huh. and the bottom in maybe the beginning of November was maybe around 30, 35 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's at $4.35.
Yeah.
versus the dollar.
Well, you mentioned that Daily Cloud, and I looked at it again just now, and I'm thinking, yeah, to me, the cloud is never wrong. So the cloud had you getting in at 162K, basically, sats.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's a fine entry. But again, like you know, we said, wrote it off several times. So
I was actually, I knew some people that were holding it, and I was telling them like the cloud would be significant resistance to get in because they were, you know, they had done pretty good call on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just giving them fair warning to be careful with, you know, potentially bouncing off the bottom of the cloud. And Silly me. But yeah, it'll make a nice new cloud, that's for sure.
Yeah, it will. And even the dollar cloud had you getting in like at 77 cents.
Yeah.
With no exit signals, even now it's moving too quick, but
I'm pretty sure I saw Nomad, who I know you follow a lot, I do as well.
Yeah,
I think he played it from 70 cents, so that he played the cloud breakout retest, mm-hmm. is what I assumed, mm-hmm. off of that.
Yeah.
So he crushed it on it. I'm sure he's out by now, but you never know.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about other. We can talk other about we can talk about other people. I just don't want to accidentally slip and talk about other people's positions, because a lot of these people I'm really close with that have known for 4 years. So we talk about it, all positions and everything. So I just have
personally. He said that one publicly.
Okay, good. That's fine.
I don't talk to him off channel, off Twitter.
Yeah. No, that's fine. I just, for me personally, I have to remind myself like, oh, this is, people are going to listen to this, you know?
Sure. Anyway, so I guess that's a preview of kind of what we would talk about when we're talking about some altcoin or whatever. And then.
Well, back to Twitter. Let's go back to Twitter for a second.
Back to Twitter. Yeah.
Oh man. So I joined Twitter in like 2009, had no clue what it was really for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And then this crypto thing starts and it's like, whoa, you can quickly disseminate information that people want to see or need to see. That doesn't age very well. Like, you know, it's after a few hours, it's kind of the move has happened or whatever. And so even for news, I think finance in general or trading, you know, it's like HFTs type stuff. Whoever can get the news the quickest, you know, can make money off that. But, and then it sort of evolved for crypto Twitter to all these personalities and these aliases. I still don't really know how that started. It's like, everyone's like crypto something, you know?
Yeah, it drives me crazy. You can't type anybody's name.
No.
Or the first whatever.
No. But yeah, then it exploded like crazy. And again, I don't even know how that happened, really.
When did it really shift for you? Was it all in 2017, or was it, did you notice like a massive whatever follower explosion, people tweeting about crypto before 2017?
I mean, there's always people tweeting about it, but nobody really cared. I tell it to a lot of people, like, I've been doing this for a while and no one really cared. And to hear people saying they care now is weird, you know? Which it's great, don't get me wrong, but you know, where were you then? But anyway, the amount of people, you know, I think after the alt season, like that March cycle in 2017, mm-hmm. March, April, May, whatever it was, with Ethereum and all that, I think that's when we saw just an explosion of people on Twitter. You know, even I do videos and articles and stuff, but I don't like promote anything. And just like tens of thousands of people now, you know, it's insane to look at these follower counts on some of these people.
Have you ever looked at Twitter analytics to see your overall like impressions and impact or whatever they call that? Yours must be enormous. Like my account's new, you know, I was just following I have regular Twitter, of course, where I've been involved in the web community for years, around since 2009 as well. So like I'm familiar with niche Twitter, you know, there's like, there's journalism Twitter and there's internet or like web developer Twitter or whatever you want to call it. And that's where I'd been involved, but I just was following too many crypto people. And I was like, I got to start a new account for this. Plus I want to like, maybe I do want to share a chart every now and then or something. And don't, you know, I'm just blown of it. People don't get it.
Right. Exactly.
So I started the Ledger Status account just before my son was born. And literally, like, I was just on my phone for a couple of weeks when he was born because, you know, infants sleep. And, like, tweeting and following people, trying, like, you know, just kind of getting to know the ecosystem a little better from that account. And it amazed me how much it exploded. You helped put me on the map, actually. I said something about Ripple, which was, like, your favorite altcoin bag to shill.
Yeah,
it's like a Bollinger Band squeeze or something, and I think that helped me get some initial followers. Like if you get something like that, then you can start to get to know people. But yeah. It's fascinating.
Yeah, the reason there's a lot of, you know, I talk about Ripple a lot because sadly I've never made more money than I made on that ripple pump. Like, insane. So insane. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's fine. And you know, there are times where Ripple's had really great technical setups.
Yeah, it does. It does trade technically. And I've said this a lot, and I'll say it again. I think Ripple gets added to Coinbase.
Me too.
If not January, sometime between like Q1 and Q2, you know, I just think it's coming.
Yeah, I can't wait until all the new people look at a coin that costs a quarter. Just like, I'm going to buy 1,000 of them or whatever.
And I don't think Ripple needs a value, honestly. Like, I don't get Ripple, so I'm not like a diehard Ripple person. It's just that I think the future is bright for Ripple. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, my tweet impressions are 17 billion. I don't really know what that means, but
17 million?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that means how many people have like seen and like scrolled past your tweets in the past whatever month.
Yeah, 28 days.
Yeah, that's wild. So there's a lot of people paying attention to this stuff, and there's a lot of new money flowing in, and yeah, it's fascinating to see how it all interacts with one another. So I agree with you, by the way, on Ripple, and Coinbase has said they're adding tokens. You went to Consensus and you came away with the feeling that Coinbase would add Ripple, and you mentioned ZRX, which made me very happy as ZeroX bag holder as well.
I need to look at that chart again so I can get some, but
it popped today like 20%.
Well, like I said,
after dying. I mean, it's been dying.
Yeah,
I got a good entry on it, so like I'm willing to just hold the bag for a long time. But ever since it listed on Polo, it had gone like 3x. On Liqui, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It went like 3x on Liqui and then like bled that out basically over a period of months since it's been on Polo. And now it's maybe 20 or 30% down from when it was initially listed on Liqui. So, and maybe it's only relative to ICO. They had a $25 million ICO. I think it's 3 or 4 times that now, which isn't that bad. In terms of, you know, overall ICO inflation, whatever you want to call that.
Mm-hmm.
So
I need to read up on it more. I don't really know enough about it. I know it's like a decentralized exchange thing, and like, I don't know. I assume it's some sort of privacy confidential transaction thing too.
No, it's mostly just a protocol. It's a protocol for what I like about it, and I'm shilling my own bag, but whatever. It's a shared liquidity platform. So like essentially share liquidity, and anyone that can create a user interface via the web can essentially create what they call a relayer for it. So essentially they are trying to become like the decentralized protocol for any exchange, so that if either existing centralized exchanges that have bad liquidity want to go decentralized or whatever, or like new exchanges don't want the liabilities that exist with being a centralized exchange, they can use the ZeroX protocol with all their APIs and whatever and share liquidity with all the other ones. So then you choose an exchange for the trading interface and not the liquidity of the exchange.
Gotcha.
So I think that's compelling. What's more compelling is that their Coinbase.
That's good.
I have to start doing that.
Yeah.
There are Coinbase people on their board, all that intertwining that I like. Because in reality, like ZRX is just one of several options. AirSwap's another one, and then there's loads of others that maybe one of these will become the protocol for decentralized trading. But you're really just making a bet on one of however many, hoping that it might do something. Or maybe you're just looking for a short-term pump, just whatever, you know, whatever your strategy is.
Yeah, there are plenty of decentralized exchanges coming online or already online as well. So I think this is like a separate topic, obviously, but I think it's going to be necessary in the future, definitely.
Yeah, you're a advisor to altcoin.io, is that what it's called?
Yeah, I've been involved in this project with... we're just trying to make an exchange that's not garbage, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm just a trader on the like advisory board, I guess you could call it.
Okay.
But now the people doing it, putting it together, Andrew, he's super motivated and he's got a good tech team behind him. They're making
it's basically on the premise of atomic swaps, though, right?
Yeah, so they're doing all this atomic swap stuff, which is just crazy. Like Ethereum and Bitcoin atomic swap and just anything to anything atomic swap. It's kind of crazy. So we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to use a decentralized exchange for trading, but from what I've experienced with it so far, it's usually the spread is enormous. And then the liquidity is very poor. So like you have to be like, okay, I'm okay with whatever this 15% range of coins that I want to buy or just give it a lot of time or whatever.
Yeah. There've been plenty of decentralized exchanges that have come and gone, and liquidity is always the key issue there.
Yeah. I guess one of the ones that's done well-ish is just EtherDelta because it's kind of the go-to ERC-20 new listing exchange, but I've never used it.
I haven't.
Something you're familiar with.
I haven't either. I tried to use the BitShares decentralized exchange and I couldn't. I've tried to use CoinPit and there's no liquidity there either.
Yeah. It's an interesting world. It'll probably be the way things are done in a few years, but right now it's very speculative, but
yeah,
maybe it'll be on Coinbase. Yeah. Or maybe Coinbase will adopt the technology. That would be great for my position.
I highly, it's completely possible considering like we were saying the board, but they can't even get SegWit listed. I don't think they have like the engineering tech behind.
Your weekly questioning or trolling of Brian Armstrong is one of my favorite things I see.
I'm pretty sure he muted me like weeks, maybe months ago. I was really hoping to see him at Consensus to like say face to face, like, Brian, we want SegWit. I'm a customer. I've been a customer for 4 years. You know, I care about fees. You said you cared about fees. It's just amazing to me that Brian especially has been so anti-Bitcoin. Like they've continually made the wrong decision like for years now. You know, they've supported Bitcoin Unlimited, Bitcoin XT, whatever it was. When they got on the Ether bandwagon, they got a lot of crap for that, even though it worked out, you know. And now they were pro SegWit 2x, and yet they don't want to add SegWit. It's like none of this makes sense. Like, where's the logic in any of this?
The logic on the whole SegWit 2x thing, and not, I mean, Bitcoin got SegWit, so like the SegWit 2x concept, the New York agreement, none of that made any sense to me. It turned me way off of actually trying to pay attention to those people, but also mm-hmm. like worried me about the Bitcoin ecosystem. Mm-hmm. That's actually why I initially was like, oh, screw this. I'm taking these Ethereum profits and putting them in Litecoin for a while, which for a while was a good decision until, of course, you know, once SegWit activated, or once, I guess it was once the Bcash fork finished, that was when Bitcoin really turned around from that, whatever, $1,800 low. So yeah, but that whole thing like worried me for a while.
Oh yeah.
Until I started to better understand Bitcoin's resistance to ridiculousness, which really showcased itself, I guess, with the China ban stuff and yeah, whatnot. But that's amazing to me.
Like I always said, if it doesn't affect the protocol, it doesn't matter. But that was affecting the protocol, and these were the companies, you know, the on ramps, the businesses who are knee deep in this stuff, and they're on the wrong side. It blew my mind. And then, like we said, he wanted SegWit 2x so badly, but then, you know, if SegWit 2x was live, would they have SegWit addresses by now? You have to think they would.
Oh, certainly.
So
like there's got to be an enormous amount of ego playing into several of these people's decision making, and you know, I think I'm close enough to like I've learned hard and fast. Like I dug in really, really quickly, but I'm basically a noob. Like you don't start this year and really claim to understand this ecosystem fully. However, like probably a lot of noobs, like I watched the Netflix Bitcoin documentary with several of the people in there. And, mm-hmm. You know, Eric Voorhees was fascinating to listen to in a documentary like that. So then seeing him from this whole SegWit 2x perspective blew my mind.
It's like, you know, following this even from 2013, it's like watching these people, your heroes, turn into villains. You know, if you don't die a hero, a hero, you live long enough to be a villain, right? Eric Voorhees, especially, you know, he he used to be really great. When Andreas flips to a villain, I'm going to really lose it, because he's like the last the last bastion of hope for me. Because everyone else is just making just the complete wrong decisions and supporting stuff that doesn't make any sense. I don't get it.
Yeah, and for me, paying close attention, at least, like people like Jihan and Roger Ver, like they'd already kind of gone off the deep end, I guess, reputation wise. But I know it was only what, last year, that they had pretty good reputations, you know.
Yeah, I mean, even Roger, just like Coinbase, was always supporting these like offshoots of Bitcoin Unlimited, Bitcoin XT. I don't know when he flipped to like wanting to fire Core, you know, this crazy propaganda stuff. I think when he realized, like, I have a lot of Bitcoin, I can fork and have more Bitcoin, and then it'll be my coin, and I can, you know, move it around the system.
It just seems pretty short-sighted to me, though. For someone that's already incredibly wealthy because of what they've done and where they've been an early adopter and innovator or whatever.
Yeah, and again, it's like, I don't understand. You know, if you supported Bitcoin the way you did back then, now, could you imagine? And so for all these people dismissing like Core or the devs, it's like, we didn't get here because of other people. We got here because of the community and the devs. So
yeah. And I think for me, that's why it was such an easy decision, because I come from a world where open source software development is like primary, and the developers that make that happen are primary. So like my natural state of trust belongs in the hands of the people that are building it. So for me, it made no sense to say like, okay, well, these business guys that have like one developer that apparently doesn't have a ton of respect anymore are the way to go. Like, that's Bitcoin. That doesn't make any sense to me.
And then it goes live and it's completely a mess. Like, how, just could you imagine if SegWit 2x was the thing, like in a parallel universe right now, where Bitcoin would be? I don't know if it would be here right now, honestly.
That would have been your trigger for an overall crypto like mega bear market, I think. I'm wrong, but
you know, it would have flipped things for sure. I don't know if it would have like lasted for months, but it wouldn't have been pretty, you know.
Yeah,
we wouldn't be here, that's for sure.
Yeah, there was actually not at whatever 12,000 plus, almost 13,000 already today on GDAX. Do you have I know you chart on Brave New Coin, which mm-hmm. is where you write. I can mm-hmm. link that, your posts up there. Yeah. I link them almost every day on Twitter again. But y'all use the Bitcoin Liquid Index, which is like an index of exchanges, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know you chart with that on like daily and weekly timeframes, mm-hmm. but if you're looking at more narrow term, what do you use?
You know, it's weird. So I'd use that for narrow term, but for some reason, the way it calculates the data, like it's
laggy.
Yeah, it's laggy, and it's it doesn't always load properly. So I'm like, ugh. Like, I really want to use it for low timeframes, but I really can't consistently.
Well, you have some kind of special access to like the average. I'm a TradingView Pro person or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And it actually doesn't show you anything daily.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's this whole separate account. Like, it's not the intraday stuff isn't available to the public. But yeah, for low time frames, I don't know. It's any exchange, usually Coinbase, GDAX. But
yeah, I look at Coinbase and Bitfinex, but I don't know. Sometimes on really low time frames, sometimes the Coinbase charts get pretty wacky.
Yeah.
But in terms of determining the price of Bitcoin, I tend to look at GDAX or Coinbase, just mm-hmm. because like that's the retail price. Right. Kind of the way the Dow is not the best way to look at the stock market. But if you ask anybody what the S&P is today, like, they're not going to really know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so on the core developer front, I want to mention, I'll link this up, but there's another podcast that they do a lot of interviews and stuff. It's mm-hmm. called Epicenter, and they interviewed Alex Morkos. He's from Chaincode Labs, and he's like one of the heavy duty core developers. And he kind of talked about this whole SegWit and scaling issue with Bitcoin, which can offer some clarity for people if they just want to hear from a core developer and wonder like what's going on from their point of view. So be sure to check that out.
Yeah, I should listen to that. Yeah, it's that Chaincode Labs thing, I think, is more involved than Blockstream is, as far as like...
Yeah, but everybody gives Blockstream a...
I know, man. I don't get it. There's like this vendetta for Blockstream, and there's all these bots, all this propaganda. all this just, it's amazing. It's like,
for people unfamiliar, the core developers that have a big say on the Bitcoin code base are concentrated to a degree amongst a few companies, Chain Code Labs being the largest by far. Like, there's several, they exist essentially to work on core. And then Blockstream is a more commercial oriented company, and they have two or three core developers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But people vilify Blockstream and core as essentially Blockstream's puppet. I don't know. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd agree with that statement.
Getting into politics, I'm new enough that I could like spit some stuff around without getting into too much trouble yet.
And even like Lightning Network, like Elizabeth Stark, I don't know who like the developers are for Lightning, but Elizabeth Stark is kind of like the figurehead for it. And I don't think she is involved. I don't know what her affiliation is as far as like a company is concerned, but I don't know. I've met most of these people. They're good people. Yeah. What's the deal here?
I think that's, so you mentioned Lightning and like anything sidechain or off chain, I guess, like not 100% of the data is on the main blockchain is one of the critiques of Bcash people, maybe more than SegWit2x.
No, I hear, I hear the problems. I get it. I understand it, but it's like, it's an opt-in thing. So if you don't want to use it, it's like SegWit. If you don't like SegWit, fine. I don't care. Buy Bitcoin Cash or don't use SegWit. You know, like, I don't like, you want low fees. I get that part very much. Who doesn't want low fees? But if you look at fees in terms of Bitcoin, I think, I don't know the chart off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure that fees in terms of Bitcoin are either stable or have been decreasing for a long time.
And for your retail Bitcoin buyers, like, they don't know anything about all that. The only fees that they understand are when they initially buy off Coinbase, and it's like, I don't know, some enormous fee. So they don't know, like, in terms of sending Bitcoin from one place to the other.
Right. But
time, you know, fees, they don't know any of that.
It's not important. Like, it's super, it's one of the reasons why I'm even involved. You know,
it's incredibly important, right. But it impacts the people actually using Bitcoin.
Right.
Not the people speculatively buying it from the sidelines.
Right. I mean, not to as much of a degree, but even like on Coinbase, I had, you know, people, you use your link, your ref link, and you get $10. It's like, I was trying to send that to some other address the other day, and it was like a $5 fee. I'm like, what?
Yeah. Here's your $50 and we'll take 10%.
So I just sent it to GDEX, you know, because it's free. And that's off chain right there. So,
yeah. And actually, if you're just, because everybody uses Coinbase, every single person at a conference I was at that was talking to me about crypto, they all were interested in it. They bought it and they owned Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin.
Yeah.
And they bought them all off Coinbase. Yeah. And then they were like, when do I buy? And why is it so expensive or weird? Or I don't know how to look at it. What's this chart mean?
Yeah.
So like sending them all to GDAX and telling them about the concept of a limit order and the fact that limit orders are fee free on GDAX. Mm-hmm. I actually think if you're just trading the big three, if you will, GDAX limit order trading is pretty nice.
Oh, yeah.
It's feeless and fast.
It's from my perspective as an American citizen, the best you can get.
Yeah. Yeah. Being insured and,
yeah,
all that. There's a lot of rage about Binance right now. It is nicer, much nicer than like Bittrex or what other alt trading platforms.
Mm-hmm.
It's still imperfect, and it's basically not quite to the scale yet of dying from new users, although they're probably already dealing with scaling issues. But it's owned by a Hong Kong company. I don't even know who the founders are.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a little scary for if you're sending significant amounts of money to it.
Well, that's another thing I don't understand. It's like, I can understand having scaling issues, but where were you the past 4 or 5 years? Like, weren't you working up to this point? You're clearly getting money out the yin yang.
You mean for like Bittrex or Polo?
Yeah, even Coinbase. It's like all these websites clearly have a huge, deep understanding of crypto, and yet they're seemingly unprepared for any of this. It's surprising to me.
I don't know. Coming from a web perspective and where performance can be really easy to get out of hand.
Yeah.
I think Coinbase or someone on Coinbase was talking about how traffic at the peak of June, like when everything was going ballistic with Ethereum and stuff, was out of proportion with what they'd ever seen. And then traffic the other day, I don't even remember what was happening, maybe when Bitcoin broke 10,000.
Yeah, it was like 8x that or something.
The other day, now it's 30,000. Okay. It was just a few days ago when it was $3,000 cheaper than it is now. Yeah, so it was like 8 times their June peaks or something like that. And that's a level of web scaling that is incredibly complex, especially where like caching is not really a thing you can do because this is all live financial data. And I don't know, you know, that's way beyond my realm of web development. Mm-hmm. But I can understand the problems and understand the issues that they're facing, because I don't think anybody would have guessed, like you probably wouldn't have guessed, like the degree of people, number of people coming into the ecosystem right now.
Yeah, I didn't see. I mean, I don't think I predicted price this high this year. You know, I thought 6K for sure was going to be the top or the near the top, and we're double that now. But yeah, I mean, it exploded. And I get it. I understand. And there's this other side of me, like, where was your contingency plan or whatever for this? You know, this is bound to happen one day. Where's the roadmap for maneuvering this, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of new people getting into Bitcoin, I think we can finish with maybe one more thing about futures trading starting up. By the time people listen to this, maybe it has already started. So it could be fun to hear your predictions on what that will cause. and then by the time most people listen to this, they will be able to judge you on your accuracy.
That's... For me, that hit me out of like left field.
Well, first of all, let's explain what it means.
Sure,
because so this is futures trading for Bitcoin. So essentially it can be traded on at least the American commodities markets, just like, you know, people trade oranges, as the movie goes. And you know that movie, right?
No, I don't know that movie.
Movie with it's a great movie. I'll have to look up the title.
okay.
But it's like scamming orange futures.
Oh, no.
It's fantastic.
I'll have to look it up.
I think it's Eddie Murphy. It's really great. And these two old guys that are brothers, they like get Eddie Murphy to do this impersonation. It's a fantastic movie. It's like from the 90s or something. Anyway, so futures trading is the ability to speculate on the price of Bitcoin and doing so at a large scale with institutional money, because it's from these places that that's what they do with other things like oil and oranges and whatever else in the world. Except for Bitcoin, of course, has never been on the map for that. But now, Josh, you know how many futures platforms are suddenly claiming Bitcoin will be here soon?
Well, there's at least three.
Yeah, so it's...
this is worldwide, too. This isn't just, you know... There's two here that I know of. At least two that are definitely... I think there's another one, like a lesser one in the United States. But there's more than one outside of the United States as well. Like some Swedish thing or something is coming as well.
So the CME Group, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, was first, I think, to announce. And now CBOE is like trying to one-up them by a day or something.
Yeah, I don't get that either. We'll have to link Nomad's article, but because we've been talking about this for a while. But there's the CBOE product is just complete trash for many reasons. But the biggest reason is it's using Gemini auction data, like end-of-day data. Like what? it's not using multiple exchanges. It's not using like a live exchange. It's using auction data. It just blows my mind. And I don't know how that's going to work, but good luck, you know?
Yeah. I haven't really even looked anything about how they like settle things.
It's super restrictive too on the amount of contracts you can hold. And like you can only hold 1,000 contracts or something before expiration. I don't know.
What's their contract size?
I think it's, he listed it. It's in the spec, but it's like $10 for a contract, maybe.
Okay.
I don't. It's like weird because it's like 1-to-1 for Bitcoin, but then like $10 is, I don't know. It's in there.
The CME group is the one that was probably the most thought out. They had like a big group that worked on it, and it was the first announced and whatever.
Yeah, but even then, like their index is just like, why Kraken
I don't know.
For God's sake, why? Why would you include an exchange that hardly ever works in your index? And what is ItBit? Have you heard of ItBit?
Never heard of it. Like, I saw someone post a chart from it that looked ludicrous, though.
It's like, again, like zero liquidity, like how much did they pay you to get on the index sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's probably some sketchy stuff going on.
because I've been here since 2013. I've never heard of ItBit. So
some biz dev dude really made it with that one.
Yeah, they're greasing some palms for sure.
Yeah, but the CME group is 5 Bitcoin per contract, and it's gap. It's going to be massive gap trading involved because they close every night and they close every weekend, just like the traditional market.
It's going to be a cluster.
Yeah. So the question is: one, this gives people that already have accounts on with CME's platform or whatever, so it gives them the ability to come in and either long or short Bitcoin. Meaning like hedge funds, bankers, whatever, like the ones that weren't the early adopters and they, you know, just YOLO'd into some exchange. This is people that were waiting for it to hit traditional markets. They're suddenly capable of doing something. So there's a lot of talk about taming Bitcoin. There's a lot of talk about shorting it to death with all their monies, whatever. So what do you think?
I think we'll see volatility for sure. The fact that everybody thinks it's going to die, Bitcoin's going to die, is... tells me that it's not.
Well, and when you say die, that would mean, you know, like maybe they'll try to force the price down.
Well, yeah, like you said, short it to death or something. Like, yeah, give me a break. Like, this is a worldwide thing. Like, if they want to, they can. It's decentralized. You know, if they with enough money, anybody can destroy anything. So,
but what's global trading volume of Bitcoin before any of this even exists? You know, like 24-hour volume is many billions of dollars, right?
Yeah, we hit, I don't know the peak, but we hit 10 billion today. So
10 billion today.
Yeah, I mean that includes probably wash trading and all sorts of shady stuff, but
sure, but still $10 billion worth of trading volume. My understanding is that people that analyze the markets, like, you can still manipulate a market with relatively small amounts of money, like whatever, millions of dollars. But still, I mean, it doesn't mean like you're going to kill it. Like, you, and even a 20, 30, 40, 50% price swing with that initial volatility doesn't really mean death by any means. It means the price of a couple months ago.
Yeah, but people outside of crypto see Bitcoin like we see IOTA right now. You know, they see it, this massive pump, thinking, I'm not going to buy here. It's going to go down, right? Like, it must be going down. It's got to go down. And then it just doesn't. So I don't know. I mean, it's in the whole, like you said, the restrictive schedule, the non 24/7 aspect. It's like putting a Riley honey badger in a square hole. Like, good luck.
Yeah.
It's just, I think it's going to be a mess. I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't, like, if they have to change something or shut it down for some period of time to, like, better, I don't know, better make the product or whatever, but it's just, I don't think it's going to work personally.
Yeah, they have market pauses built in or whatever.
Yeah, those, I don't even mean that. Like, that's going to happen all the time. I just mean, like, they're going to have to rethink some things, I think, after people complain about it or stuff goes haywire.
Plus, they'll have claimed to kill Bitcoin with some degree of, or some people will call tops and all that stuff, with some degree of drop. But just for perspective, right now, a $4,000 drop gets you to the Bollinger Band middle line, and it gets you to, on the Ichimoku system, it gets you to a Kijun bounce on a daily time frame.
So, and I tweeted about this, but I was talking to some guys about the CME stuff, and they were all excited to, like, short Bitcoin or whatever. And
actually, I really like that target. I might have to put some orders in around 8,500.
And so they were talking about it, like, yeah, Bitcoin's going to, we're going to short it, blah, blah, blah. And I said to them what I'm going to say now, which is, it's already very high. The odds of it rolling over at any point are probably very high. And as soon as CME goes live, all the headlines are going to read, you know, CME killed Bitcoin, or, you know, people dancing on the grave sort of thing. And it's like, well, if you look at the technicals, it's obviously up 1,100% this year. So a pullback is not out of the question, just based on that, you know?
Yeah, but pullback for Bitcoin and pullback for a traditional market is like, you can't even, I mean.
That's what I tell everybody, all these people, these new people are getting in. I'm like, buy it, hold it, don't look at it every day, you're going to have a heart attack.
The 50-week moving average currently is 4275 on Coinbase. So the 50 EMA on the weekly is 42.75, which is like still bullish. Like if you're above the 50, you're super bullish. Like the cloud is on the weekly, the top of the cloud is 18.75 on a weekly. So it's basically unusable at this growth scale.
Exactly.
But that you're talking about some serious moves. Probably what people would say for killing it or whatever you want to call it, like entering a bear market, they would say you're leaving the parabola. That's Peter Brandt's favorite thing to look at, and some other people. So
yeah, this guy Parabolic Trev. He like popped up out of nowhere talking about Bitcoin.
Yeah, just Parabolic Trav.
But he's been putting out some good stuff though, so he's worth a follow.
Yeah, yes.
I was just trying to pull up a chart on Coinbase. Yeah, I mean the supports are low, but to what, 10K? Like I definitely see us pausing there if we go down. Just based on psychological support, but
yeah, psychological support, and it's a tink and bounce around there.
Yeah,
10-2.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, we'll see some volatility. I'm looking forward to the gaps, though. I really am looking forward to Bitcoin on all the exchanges moving like $2,000 or something, and then like just I wish I could be inside the heads of the people trading on those markets and wonder, you know. Knowing their shorts are going to be messed up as soon as the market opens or whatever.
Yeah, we see so much movement on like Asia time zone or London time zone or the weekend. You know, it's like someone has said before, crypto is like the futures market of the world on the weekends. And, you know, all these companies and all these central bankers like to announce stuff off market hours, but Bitcoin's still alive. So who knows, you know, how that's going to affect things. I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Long term, once these issues are figured out, I do like that it gives access to institutional money. I think that's important for the global adoption of Bitcoin or whatever.
And it's not even, it's cash settled anyway. So it's.
Yeah. There's no Bitcoins involved.
And. If anything, it's a stepping stone to a Bitcoin-backed ETF eventually. So whatever happens now, it's for the best. So
yeah, but it'll be some interesting swings. And I guess, is it possible? I mean, whatever the thing, you know, there's something where you can kind of invest in Bitcoin from a 401k that's a totally different price. I don't even know what it is. But could it kind of be like that, where it basically trades independently of Bitcoin and ends up being kind of a nothing burger? Or do you think the mental effect on the Bitcoin price will occur because of what's happening with these? I don't know.
I mean, it could be like GBTC, which is just, insanity, but it's still the movements sort of line up with Bitcoin spot. But
the prices are way different.
The prices are whatever the prices are, you know?
That's the product I was thinking about. Okay. I just don't know. I've never even used it or I never even knew it existed until a few months ago. So
yeah.
I heard some people that say they had Bitcoin through their 401k. I was like, what?
how
is that?
Yeah.
I'm curious how it'll go. I definitely think I've talked to enough like regular people, old people, people with 401ks, whatever you want to call it, people that aren't in Bitcoin right now that are like waiting for this kind of thing before they get involved. So that'll be really curious.
Yeah, we'll see. More like we said, more exposure is never a bad thing.
So we have other ideas for the podcast. We obviously just kind of did a whole ecosystem overview today, but we'll try to stick with a primary topic most weeks, do a little news of the week, maybe an indicator of the week and how we use it.
I mean, if you know anything about me, I have plenty to talk about.
I doubt we'll struggle with things to discuss. We'll probably struggle more with keeping within any sort of goal time frame. Audience questions. If people have questions, feel free to hit us up on Twitter with a question or maybe put up a form on my website or something like that. And then we might do a coin of the week type of thing as long as we feel like we have something to talk about. We talked about a couple earlier, so we can stick with those for now since we're basically out of time. And yeah, I hope everybody will subscribe and check out the podcast and follow Josh on Twitter. And that's Carpe Noctem. What's that mean?
Seize the night.
Seize the night.
It's even spelled wrong because quick story. So Jinx is this like, have you heard of Jinx? It's like this retail shirt store. They sell other merch.
No.
Anyways, this is like back in the day. I used to buy stuff from them, and that's how they spell it on their store. And Carpe Noctem with an E was actually taken on Gmail. Anyway, so yeah, Carpe Noctem sees the night. I'm super night owl, so that's why.
Nice.
And yeah, let me plug the YouTube as well. YouTube, Twitter, you know, I don't really care if people subscribe or watch my shit stuff. So, but it's out there if you want to see it, you know?
Yep. I'll link up all that stuff because I think it's mandatory reading pretty much, including your frequent price analysis that you do on Brave New Coin. Check those out. Insta, retweet, all of the above. I was happy to see you do one on Monero, which is currently one of my larger holdings that's been nice to me.
When I read into that, I got super fanboyish, and I was I was sad that I sold at the right time, but I'm still sad I don't have any right now.
Yeah, it's you sold on the breakout of that pennant.
Yeah. No, I sold months ago.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, no, I didn't sell anything that lately, but anyway.
Yeah, it's an interesting one versus Bitcoin, huge market cycles.
Yeah.
Yeah, so check out everything that you're reading and then just follow Ledger Status on Twitter and then go to ledgerstatus.com. We'll have new episodes there, iTunes, all those types of things. All right, thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll catch you next time. Monuments crumble.